Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, and a great day after perhaps the greatest day for the Trump administration. A singular and nearly unanimously praised agreement that was reached yesterday and celebrated at the White House. They called it the Abraham Accords, based on children of Abraham from Ishmael coming together with children of Abraham from Isaac. And yes, that's a historic moment. It's not quite the beginning of the millennium, but it is the beginning of what is going to be a very important process. And one of the people, I believe, who put the events of yesterday, the deal announced in the White House between the United Arab Emirates and the State of Israel, and the forthcoming deal with Bahrain, which was also there, was Brett Stevens. Brett is a former editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. He knows the Middle East up close and personal. He, of course, is a widely read, consistently outstanding columnist for the New York Times. Brett, why is it that some folks, I noticed the J Street in the paper today, which purports to be a Jewish organization, are condemning this deal, which is such a positive for Israel, for the United States, for the Arab world, for humanity at large? Why would anyone condemn this?
Well, I think, or I suspect, I don't know for sure, Michael, but I think it is a reluctance bordering on refusal to give either the Trump administration or the Netanyahu government in Israel any credit. And I think you know I've been a fairly persistent critic of this administration, and I've had my share of criticisms of Bibi as well, but when something good happens, it behooves those of us who try to be honest to praise it. And the accord between Israel, the UAE, and Bahrain is probably one of the most positive achievements in the Middle East in this century, and it would be, I think it's crazy not to celebrate it. And I think the fact that organizations like J Street refuse to do so shows that they let their antipathies get the better of their good judgment.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. I mean, J Street, I don't know what they are devoted to exactly. They have become increasingly advocates for the more radical Palestinians who perpetually reject even negotiations with the State of Israel. The point that you made, I thought, in your column yesterday in the Times was outstanding, which is that Trump succeeded here where others had failed because he got rid of one of the stupid paradigms that had dominated our Middle East policy and Middle East thinking, the paradigm that basically what was necessary for the Arab world to improve or progress was that first you had to make peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Why was that so entirely wrong and destructive?
Well, it was wrong because Palestinians consistently refused to make peace, and they did so in 2000 at Camp David. They did so in 2008 with the Ehud Olmert offer. And so it had become, if you know the myth of the Gordian knot, that the Palestinian side had become the Gordian knot of the Middle East. It was unsolvable. What I think Trump and his administration at the time is cutting, because they have realized that there's another way of potentially reaching peace, which is not from the inside out, but if they start with Israel and the Palestinians and then work your way through the rest of the Arab world, but perhaps from the outside in, start with Israel's relationship with the wider Arab world and then maybe the Palestinian problem will resolve itself. I think that's certainly the hope. And it's a more plausible paradigm than what we've had for the last 50 years. You know, it's a cliche that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. But that's what American diplomacy for generations, where the Palestinians had become, in fact, the whole world's diplomacy. And for once, someone tried something different, and lo and behold, it worked.
And it worked precisely because both sides, and this is, it seems to me, received insufficient coverage, were giving something. And Israel renounced, or at least postponed, annexation of any territory on the West Bank and the Jordan Valley, or even the territory in which major Israeli communities exist. And at the same time, in their agreement with Bahrain, there was an additional part of the agreement, if you actually read the papers, that assures Bahrain that they will continue the policy of unlimited access to people of all faiths to the holy sites in Jerusalem, which, of course, is important to a lot of the Arab states, including these very traditional oil states in the Gulf, right?
Right, and that, of course, has been Israeli policy for 53 years. So it wasn't really a concession. It was a promise to continue a policy of ensuring that Jerusalem is a city that is open to all faiths, which has been true since Israel has been in control of Jerusalem. Was not true in the 19 years when it was half of it was under the control of Jordan.
What happens next? I know that there's the expectation that there will be other nations, maybe Oman, maybe Kuwait, maybe Sudan, maybe Morocco. Do you believe that there's a possibility that literally in the next few weeks we could have other Arab states getting on board this peace train?
Well, I think Oman, for example, is in the midst of a political transition. The sheikh who had ruled, Sheikh Qaboos, who had ruled Oman for many years, actually received Prime Minister Netanyahu personally in Muscat, the capital of the country. And so it's likely that we're going to see Oman change. Same with Kuwait. Morocco is another possibility. The big prize, Michael, is Saudi Arabia. The Saudis have so far refused to play along, except, and this is very important, that the Saudis are now permitting El Al flights to overfly Saudi Arabia on their way to Dubai or Abu Dhabi or, of course, now Manama. That's an important concession, and it really shows that the Arab-Israeli conflict, as we have known it, is pretty much at an end. The real conflicternizers, whether it's in the United Arab Emirates or in Jerusalem, and the absence of radicals and fundamentalists who are centered in places like Tehran.
Yeah, and Turkey increasingly as well. I mean, this is one of those things. My brother asked this question, is that which side do you want to be on? You want to be on the side with Hamas and Hezbollah in Iran and Turkey, or on the side of civilization, which this choice really is about. Any chance that with Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, I think he's entering his 19th year of his four-year elected term as president of the Palestine Authority, any chance that the Palestinians will come back to the table and negotiate in good faith?
The chances are greater, because I think the realization will eventually dawn on the Palestinians that they are being left behind, that the world has moved on. The Arab world has other problems. The rest of the world has other problems. They're not the center of the world's attention. And I think they have to be far more conciliatory and accept that a Palestinian state can be beautiful, but it's going to be small. Other countries are like that too, and there's no reason that a future Palestinian state might not be that. If they reconcile themselves to peace, permanent peace with Israel, and a policy of genuine progress for themselves and for the rest of the region.
Economically and governmentally, and after all, the new Palestinian state would still be larger than the UAE in land area or Bahrain. That's Brett Stevens of the New York Times. Thanks for the time, Brett. You can read his column, which is outstanding, about the peace deal. So wait till you hear the column being poo-pooed on NBC. We will get to that and to more. What did Joe Biden say about it? It's relevant. Coming up on the MedVet Show. Have you had the chance to visit our partners at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College? Faithandfreedom.com or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com. They're a top think tank in the nation for the application of faith and freedom. That's why I visit Grove City College every year to be part of their annual conference, speaking on more than a dozen different topics to a total of thousands of participants. I'm proud to broadcast this show from their campus every year when I'm there, because it's such a wonderful event. Unfortunately, this year's conference was postponed due to the pandemic, but I encourage you to visit their website. All of their past conferences are available. You can catch my talks along with many other great presentations. Dr. Paul Kenger, Jonah Goldberg, Rick Santorum, Ross Douthat, Ralph Peters, Robbie George, and many, many more. Go to faithandfreedom.com to see wonderful presentations from the sharpest minds in America. Faithandfreedom.com or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com.
The coronavirus pandemic has thrown our nation into somewhat of a chaotic situation, and we now find ourselves in completely uncharted territory. As usual, the media presents a confusing, often exaggerated portrayal of events. So where can you go for reliable information? The American Council on Science and Health, ACSH. ACSH is a 501c3 nonprofit whose mission is to separate fact from fiction and health scares from legitimate health threats. Their expert scientists and medical doctors have been communicating science to the public since 1978. At ACH.org, you'll get answers to all your coronavirus questions. How does it spread? Should I wear a mask? Will there be a treatment? How can I keep my family safe? ACSH also debunks common myths, such as vitamin C being a cure. ACSH provides indispensable analysis in this era of disinformation. You can sign up for a free daily newsletter and contribute to this vital organization. Go to ACSH.org today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Michael Medved show, the week after we celebrated the September 11th anniversary, there are new concerns about a comeback for Al-Qaeda and even for ISIS. So what is to be done? We will get to that coming up this hour with Ilan Berman, who is Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council in Washington, written a very provocative and alarming column. And speaking of alarming, I've been mentioning the way the at least one of the networks, and not all of them, CNN, I think, was appropriately gracious and celebratory with the president and with Jared Kushner, who largely negotiated this, and the Abraham Accords of yesterday. But Chuck Todd was on NBC, and during the live coverage, listen to the way, this is clip six, that Chuck Todd characterized the signing ceremony and even expressed the idea that it was making people uncomfortable. Why, unless you were some kind of crazed radical, would it make you uncomfortable? Listen.
You know, Peter, this deal is a bit uncomfortable for a lot of observers to watch because it seems so transactional. It's as if pulling out of the Iran deal is what got these Gulf states on board to do this, you know, to then recognize it. It feels like there is a lot of quid pro quos involved in this, that it isn't something larger than that. Then again, sometimes Middle East diplomacy, the only way to make things move is through the transactional nature of the region.
Obviously, what is ignored here as well, Chuck, even as the president says that he has created peace in the Middle East, that's usually referred to as peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians here. But the campaign, the Trump campaign, has been touting this preemptively as the president having achieved peace in the Middle East. They even noted that he was a Nobel Prize nominee at this point, though they spelled Nobel wrong in the campaign advertisement that they put out. But the Palestinians are furious, of course, because they feel they've been betrayed in this circumstance, not just by the Trump administration, which they have long felt, but also by these Arab Gulf states.
Okay, and let it be known that the missiles that were lobbed yesterday that injured six Israelis, and they were missiles that were launched from Gaza, which is controlled by Hamas, which is a terror organization. It is labeled by everyone as a terror organization. It has killed Americans. It has killed people of all nations. And the past has killed many Israelis. And the idea that Hamas should take advantage of the peace signing to try to send some missiles to show that they feel uncomfortable with it, well, that's not necessarily a surprise. What is a surprise is it's not just Chuck Todd. Listen to, also on NBC, Lester Holt, who I generally respect, and Andrea Mitchell, also downplaying what is an historic deal. Listen.
Broader Middle East peace is still an elusive goal.
With pomp and circumstance, the president heralding the first Arab nations to recognize Israel since 1994, the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. Both countries have quietly dealt with Israel for years, sharing intelligence against Iran, a common enemy. But today's agreements open the doors for trade, travel, and tourism. But it is not Middle East peace. Left out, the Palestinians, abandoned by their Arab neighbors, powerless to do anything but protest. The UAE is likely to get what it wants, coveted F-35 stealth bombers from the U.S. The big winners, two embattled political leaders, Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu, owing President Trump for helping him squeak out two recent election victories, still under pressure at home, but flying here to return the favor and getting a key to the White House.
And it's a key to our country and to our hearts.
The key to the hearts of the people of Israel, because of all the great things you've done.
And the president can portray himself as a peacemaker. He says worthy of a Nobel Prize, 49 days before the election.
Okay, again, they're viewing this in a political context, which is entirely wrong. Long after the tumult and the shouting dies, that's Rudyard Kipling's phrase, but long after the tumult and the shouting dies and this election is done, people will be remembering this as a breakthrough, particularly if it involves other nations. And President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu assured people that it will. And again, the idea that there's something wrong about this being a deal of a transactional nature, that both sides get something, that it's a win-win for both sides. What's wrong with that? Isn't that the nature of any negotiation? Isn't that exactly what you were trying to achieve? Look, this is such a good thing for the world and for everybody involved. It seems to me shocking that people would attempt to poo-poo it. Here is a much better statement. Today, Israel and the United Arab Emirates have taken a historic step to bridge the deep divides of the Middle East. The United Arab Emirates' offer to publicly recognize the State of Israel is a welcome, brave, and badly needed act of statesmanship. And it is a critical recognition that Israel is a vibrant, integral part of the Middle East, that it is here to stay. Israel can and will be a valued strategic and economic partner to all who welcome it. Now, who said that, you think? He went on to say, the coming together of Israel and the Arab states builds on efforts of multiple administrations to foster a broader Arab-Israeli opening, including the efforts of the Obama-Biden administration to build on the Arab Peace Initiative. The Arab Peace Initiative was something launched by Saudi Arabia. It didn't really go too far. But that was Joe Biden. That's his official statement. And it's really not bad. He added that he and Senator Kamala Harris, his announced running mate, would work to expand on the progress made to try to negotiate peace in the Middle East. Quote, the United Arab Emirates and Israel have pointed a path toward a more peaceful, stable Middle East. A Biden-Harris administration will seek to build on this progress and will challenge all the nations of the region to keep pace. Anything wrong with that statement? No, it seems to me perfectly appropriate. He did everything that he could other than congratulating President Trump and saying, well, he is a legitimate candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize. Look, sometimes things happen in unlikely and unexpected ways. And I think that a part of Dr. Johnson once said, the gallows doth wonderfully concentrate the mind. And I do think that the coronavirus is part of this. Because Israel, as by far the most technologically advanced state in the region, has been apparently quietly helpful in combating the virus and more with some of its potential peace partners. And maybe the mind is concentrated actually on working together rather than constant confrontation. Speaking of constant confrontation, is it true that Al-Qaeda is in the midst of a significant and dangerous comeback? We'll talk about that with Ilan Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council in D.C. Coming up.
Michael Medved.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight. At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutrifies the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Life-threatening flooding is occurring over portions of the Florida Panhandle in southern Alabama due to Hurricane Sally. The storm came on shore this morning as a Category 2 hurricane with winds above 100 miles an hour.
Over the southern and southeastern portions of the state, we are posturing for some severe inland flooding. A lot of those communities are low-lying and already have problems with rain events, but this is definitely going to be historic.
Jonathan Gaddy with the Alabama Emergency Management Agency speaking there on Fox News. Democrats and Republicans facing pushback over a stalled coronavirus relief bill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying today she would not vote on a pandemic relief bill that has no bipartisan support. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden laying out his vaccine plan in Wilmington, Delaware. This is USA Radio News.
The battle of late stage or terminal illness is a fight that affects everything and everyone in your life. If you or a loved one are dealing with advanced stage conditions that are causing financial hardship, like stage 3 or stage 4 cancer, Alzheimer's, COPD, or ALS, then this message is for you. Our Funds for Living program make it a simple 3-step process. Text the word LIVE to 411-411 or visit fifthseasonfinancial.com/radio and we'll send you a link to get started. Choose the amount of money you need. Apply in seconds. That's it. And you're under no obligation. Fifth Season will advance a portion of your life insurance policy and take over your premium payments so you can provide immediate financial relief to the ones you love, all without any out-of-pocket expenses. Fifth Season Financial wants to help you live your best life. Text LIVE to 411-411. Text the word LIVE to 411-411.
We've entered a time where sky truly is the limit and opportunity awaits. The Internet has become a platform of everyone's worldwide communications. Billionaires building businesses on platforms that didn't even exist a generation ago. But in the sea of noise, how can the voice of your business be heard? The secret is over 100 years old. Radio, 228% more effective than TV. That's 228% more effective than television. Brick and mortar and cyber businesses alike have found radio to be the most effective for building a brand and delivering customers. Learn the secrets of radio advertising by calling 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Michael Medved Show, pleased to welcome Ilan Berman. He's Senior Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council in the nation's capital. He has consulted in the past for the United States Central Intelligence Agency, as well as the U.S. Departments of State and Defense. And he's also provided assistance on foreign policy and national security issues to a range of governmental agencies and congressional offices. He has a new column, which we have posted our website. The column is entitled, 19 Years On, We Face a Resilient Islamist Threat. And that was published in The Hill publication. It's posted on our website. Ilan, thank you for this, but it's, I don't think, a message that Americans really want to hear. Would you count as one of those people who has been a little bit surprised that since September 11th in 19 years, we haven't had some kind of spectacular, big, well-organized assault on our homeland by Islamic terrorists? Has that surprised you at all?
Well, yes and no. So I think it's necessary to say that it's not for a lack of trying that we haven't had such an attack. And in fact, you know, the Department of Homeland Security regularly releases reports about attempted terrorist attacks and plots that it's thwarted. And so a lot of the credit is due to the sort of the vigilance of law enforcement agencies and our ability to detect and disrupt plots before they become actual. But a lot of the credit is also due to our persistent engagement in the war, in what was called, what has become to be known as the war on terror, because the threat potential of these groups is a function of resources, and it's also a function of time. And if they're preoccupied fighting the U.S.-led coalition in the Middle East or in North Africa, they have less time to plot and to plan and to reach out and touch us.
Well, we had all thought, and we have been informed time and again, that ISIS was crushed, that the caliphate was over. And what you're saying in your article is that ISIS is resurgent. How and why do you know that?
Right. Well, so the best analogy I can use as someone who has children that not too long ago were small is that ISIS is like a tube of toothpaste. And if a small child squeezes a tube of toothpaste, it doesn't go away. It comes out the top and it comes out the bottom. And that's precisely what we've done to the ISIS caliphate in Iraq and Syria. We've squeezed it very hard. The global coalition, which is more than 80 countries, has really assembled and marshaled a formidable military offensive against ISIS, and it's been successful. But by all accounts, by all measures, and there's lots of think tanks and institutes and international organizations that are watching this, what they've seen is not a complete dispersal of ISIS, but a repositioning of the organization. As we've squeezed them in Iraq and Syria, they've gone to other places. They've gone to Southeast Asia or North Africa. And there's a lot of resilience there. There's a lot of manpower that ISIS still has. They have a lot of resources in terms of money. So what you see is a more scattered threat, but it's a threat that's still there.
And you also say that that Al-Qaeda, even after the death of Osama bin Laden, that Al-Qaeda has also taken something of a breather because we've been so preoccupied with ISIS, and they're reconstituting. Do you think they have the intent and perhaps even plans to hit the American homeland again?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And the reality is that Al-Qaeda has really positioned itself, I think, frankly, more shrewdly and more sustainably than ISIS, right? So everybody has spent the last half decade focused on ISIS because ISIS is so brutal and so extreme, and, you know, the imagery coming out of the Middle East is so appalling that it's galvanized public opinion. But the corollary of that is that we've made the focus on ISIS almost the exclusive purview of our counterterrorism efforts. And that's why we've missed telltale signs in places like Yemen, in places like North Africa and the Sahel region in North Africa, that Al-Qaeda not only is alive, but Al-Qaeda is actually insinuating itself into local communities. It's styling itself as an alternative to ISIS, and it's really putting down roots in a way that's enormously significant. You know, a good example is that Al-Qaeda has a very formidable presence in 13 of Yemen's 21 provinces currently, right? It is in de facto control of more territory than it ever has been before. But all of this has happened mostly unnoticed because we've been paying so much attention to the Islamic State threat.
Recently, you talk about reaching down into Yemen. Right now, there's talk about further states in the Gulf, states like Oman or Sudan or even in North Africa, Morocco, signing the same kind of peace deal with Israel that the UAE and Bahrain did. Would these ISIS and Al-Qaeda threats discourage any of those countries from doing that or perhaps make that kind of cooperation even more likely?
Well, so I'm certainly not going to discourage it, because what you're seeing that's taking place, and, you know, it's frankly a trend that's been taking place for a long time, but peace agreements that were yesterday on the South Lawn of the White House were really the sort of the public face of a quiet dialogue that's been happening for years. And you're absolutely right. It's not just the UAE in Israel or Bahrain in Israel. There's a whole set of other countries that are sort of inching closer to having this sort of formalization. But part of sort of the driving dynamic of why these countries and Israel are drawing closer together is a shared understanding of common threats. So far, that common threat has been mostly state-based in nature, right? They have shared concerns over a rising Iran and increasingly aggressive Iran. But I think over time, it's very easy to expect that type of cooperation between Israel and the Arab world will expand into more robust counterterrorism measures and, frankly, more understanding about the shared threat that these groups pose.
Okay, what about timing on something like this? I know that our terrorist adversaries are very aware of an American election. Do you think that they would calculate that striking against America before the election would hurt Trump, or do they recognize that it might, in fact, help him?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I certainly, you know, don't profess any unique knowledge into what they're thinking, but if I was an adversary of the United States and I was looking at what's happening in the country from abroad, I would bide my time. I would keep my powder dry because there's a lot of, as we know, there's a lot of social division. There's a lot of economic and political cleavages. These groups, like America's other adversaries, don't want to create anything that would cause greater unity in the country. In fact, they want disunity. And the current state of political affairs is something that I think they want to perpetuate rather than end.
Okay, so the one good side about the terrible disunity that afflicts our country right now is it may discourage, at least temporarily, some of the nefarious intentions of our pledged and deadly adversaries. It's a very sobering piece that Ilan Berman has written, and I urge you to read it. The headline, 19 years on, we face a resilient Islamist threat. And we've talked about ISIS and Al-Qaeda, haven't gone into some of the local jihadist movements, which are kind of franchising that sort of activity in various countries that are highly vulnerable. Ilan Berman, I hope we can catch up with you again soon. When we come back, there's a story that captured a great deal of attention, two stories actually, involving football. And yes, they're playing football now in many places. They're maybe playing more of it. But one story involving players who were suspended from the team because they carried thin blue line flag honoring police officers and a thin red line flag honoring firefighters. What was wrong with that? We'll get to that story and more coming up on the MedVet Show. This is Michael Medved, and I know you're worried, like everybody else, about the coronavirus and its impact on our future. Now, all the false, fake information spreading around the internet really does bother me, especially about the economy and how it impacts your financial future. I've always trusted Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, to advise me on the right moves. Nick?
With the government adding nearly $5 trillion in liquidity, the uptrend in metals is likely to accelerate. The problem is, the supply of physical gold, silver, and platinum is severely limited and likely to get a lot worse as various mints and refiners are closed. With my 40 years worth of connections, I can help your listeners acquire gold, silver, or platinum, even though many dealers are sold out.
Call Nick Grovich at 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694. Or go to AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694 at AmericanFederal.com.
Maybe you're skeptical that Relief Factor, 100% drug-free Relief Factor, can really help you get out of pain. I can understand if Relief Factor were a brand new product. Sure, I'd be skeptical too. But Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of Relief Factor, started the company almost 7 years ago. And we've been talking about it all that time, virtually every day. And now tens of thousands of people have ordered the 3-week quick start and are taking it every day to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is here to stay for a very good reason. So go ahead, be a little skeptical, but I suggest you might become like me and so many others who've tried it, a believer. Neck, shoulder, hip, knee pain, or back pain in my case, from just getting older, exercise, or everyday living, the 3-week quick start is discounted to only $19.95. It's like a trial pack. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Or call 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Michael Medved Show. One of the things that I care about a lot in doing this show is trying to speak to you in context, because you hear some stories and you just read the headlines and they sound absolutely horrible, or one side or another side. And then you dig a little bit deeper and you find out, in many cases, there are two sides to a story. Well, for instance, there's a story from southern Ohio. It's in southern Warren County. There's a school district called the Little Miami School District. And the Little Miami School District high school football team took the field on Friday, September 11th. And a couple of players carried alongside the American flag. They didn't replace the American flag. They just had a flag aside from it, a thin blue line flag, which has a thin blue line representing support for police, and then a thin red line flag. And thin red line represents support for firefighters. The kid who carried the thin red line flag was son of a firefighter. The kid who carried a thin blue line flag was son of a cop. And they were both suspended. It sounds absolutely terrible. But then a news report in Ohio from Fox 19 actually put it in a little bit more context. Listen, clip 15A.
You know, two Little Miami football players have been suspended from their team after they ran on the football field with a thin blue line and thin red line flag. The school tells us they were told not to do it and did it anyways. Our Amber Jams joins us live to explain what happened.
That's right, Rob. Well, we know the two students, Brady Williams and Jared Bentley, are now suspended from the football team. And as you mentioned, on Friday night during their game, they were coming across the field carrying the thin blue line and thin red line flag across that field. And they were doing it because they wanted to honor the firefighters and also the police officers for the anniversary of 9/11, that 19th anniversary. So for them, we're told it was a big deal because they have relatives who are on the force. But again, this is a look at that video. that we were able to capture of the incident that happened on Friday night during the game against the Terpins here at home. And again, you can see them running across the field with the flags. Now, the spokesperson for Little Miami Schools says that the players, they did ask for permission in advance to run with the flags, and they were told no, but they decided to do it anyway. So as a result, the school decided to suspend Williams and Bentley from the football team.
Okay, it seems like an excessive punishment, but the fact that they asked permission, which is the right thing to do, and they were denied permission, which is the wrong thing to do, and then you do it anyway, there has to be some kind of consequence, but obviously there has been a great deal of community pressure, and I think that's appropriate. Community pressure urging the school authorities to reconsider, and my guess is they will listen.
Now, since this video has surfaced, it's gained a lot of support. It's been viewed and shared more than 1,000 times. And the spokesperson for Little Miami Schools released this statement saying Little Miami Schools is saddened to see this story take such a negative turn. While we understand these students' desire to show their support for our first responders, they did not obtain permission from district officials, and administrators must act when students break the rules. Now, the Patriot Night program to memorialize the victims of 9/11 was already part of the pregame ceremonies on Friday, and the American flag is the first thing through the tunnel every Friday night. So, along in that statement, the district also said that they support law enforcement. They have a close working relationship. And so when I did ask how long the suspension was, if there was a timeline from it, we're told at this point there is no time for that suspension. So possibly indefinitely at this point. But again, as I mentioned, a lot of support from the community, a lot of people saying that this punishment is too harsh. And so we did speak to a person who now is organizing a rally, and they're planning to show some type of support for those players during their next home game.
Okay, look, I think the players deserve support, but I think that they also acknowledge, and they've said so in interviews, that they're willing to take the consequences. They knew there might be consequences when they asked permission beforehand, but then went ahead. Here's what the school district says in its statement. They say, we can't have students who decide to do something anyway after they've been told that they shouldn't be doing it. As said Gregory Power, speaking for the school. He said he saw the flags as symbols of a political point of view and didn't want to set a precedent. Quote, we did not want to place ourselves in a circumstance where another family might want a different flag to come out of the tunnel, one that maybe many other families may not agree with from a political perspective. Okay, boy, I think what's going to happen here is they probably will have a minor suspension or one game or something of that nature. But the tricky question here is, what would they have said if a player had come to them and say, I want to have a Black Lives Matter flag? Would they have allowed that? And the chances are they would. So if you're going to claim that Black Lives Matter is not political, then it's completely hypocritical and wrong to claim that a thin blue line or a thin red line is political. Because if Black Lives Matter is not controversial at all, actually it is because of some of the excesses of the Black Lives Matter protesters. But if you're going to say that's not controversial, how can you say that support for firefighters and police officers, especially in the commemoration of 9/11, that is political? And this is one of those questions, it seems, that makes people feel that America is rigged and tilted in the wrong direction. And anything that tilts away from respect for and support for the police is the wrong direction. And here's a bit of political correctness run wild, or maybe, just maybe, I'm fascinated by this story, actually. It's not political correctness, it's really an attempt to make fun of political correctness. The headline in the New York Times is Columbia marching band shuts itself down over offensive behavior. And it says the Columbia University marching band, which dated back to 1904, had developed a wide reputation over the years for its irreverent, quirky performances at Lions football games and basketball games. It had served as the irrepressible court jester to the university's staid administration, and at times has offended students in the wider campus community with its jokes. One of the things that they do with a marching band is every year during finals period, they go into the library where people are trying to study for finals, and they entertain them by playing a lot of very loud, rousing band music. Okay, the band had posted a statement on its own Facebook page, and it says that our band has long been rife with sexual misconduct, assault, theft, racism, and injury to individuals and the Columbia community as a whole, and they were suspending the band. The band was disbanded. And in a statement, the Columbia University officials, not noted for their sense of humor, said, "We respect efforts of the band's student leadership to address in a serious manner recent reports of offensive and unacceptable conduct entirely at odds with the values of our community." I think they're just disbanding this band as a joke, as a goof. I went back and looked at the student newspaper, at the original statement, and what they're objecting to was apparently members of the band actually used a Native American war cry at a game. There were personal accounts from former band members of lewd behavior, binge drinking, and sexual harassment at band gatherings and parties, and sex involving band members who were too drunk to give their consent. Now, I don't want to belittle those things, but it seems to me in their statement, the band's board said it had maintained a club structure founded on the basis of racism, cultural oppression, misogyny, and sexual harassment. The band said that while it has some tolerance for off-pitch music and corny jokes, we have a zero-tolerance policy for sexual assault, and we do not tolerate any racist, sexist, transphobic, or otherwise harmful behavior. The statement said that the band's disbanding would give the university time to heal from decades of harm caused by this organization, to create a space that allows for the formation of a new spirit group that will provide a safe and inclusive outlet for students to play music at Columbia. I think that's all tongue-in-cheek. But I could be wrong in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Can't get a Wi-Fi signal where you want it? There's a new solution out there from Sea Crane. It extends your Wi-Fi range up to half a mile away. Wi-Fi is super important, but the Wi-Fi signal doesn't travel very far. Sea Crane has a new solution called the CC Vector Extended Long Range Wi-Fi System. It provides a new reliable Wi-Fi to half a mile away, and it works with all Wi-Fi devices and saves you the cost of a new internet service. The CC Vector Extended Long Range Wi-Fi System provides basic internet service for surfing the web, making Skype calls, watching standard quality video on TV, and most important, streaming audio from CRN Talk Radio. You must have a line of sight view between the CC Vector and your host router. Best of all, you have Sea Crane's friendly crew to help you set it up. Check it out, the CC Vector Extended Long Range Wi-Fi System at seacrane.com/booster. That's seacrane.com/booster, or call 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus.
That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1-liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.